Well, hey, leader, and welcome to episode number 359 of the L3 Leadership Podcast, where we are obsessed with helping you grow to your maximum potential and to maximize the impact of your leadership. My name is Doug Smith, and I am your host, and today's episode is brought to you by my friends at Veritung Advisors. We're also recording live from the Return.com studio, which you'll hear more about in just a moment. If you're new to the podcast, welcome. I'm so glad that you're here, and I hope that you enjoy our content and become a subscriber. Know that you can also watch all of our episodes over on our YouTube channel at L3 Leadership, so make sure you're subscribed there as well. And as always, if you've been listening to the podcast for a while and it's impacted your life, it would mean the world to me, sincerely, if you would leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really does help us to grow our audience and reach more leaders, so thank you in advance for that. Well, leader, in today's episode, you'll hear my conversation with Heather Zempel. If you're unfamiliar with Heather, let me just tell you a little bit about her. Heather is a native Alabamian who currently leads the discipleship efforts at National Community Church in Washington, D.C., where she oversees small groups, directs leadership development training, and serves on the weekend teaching team. She attained her bachelor's and master's degree in biological engineering from Louisiana State University. She worked as an environmental engineer and as a policy consultant on energy and environment in the United States Senate before coming on staff at National Community Church. Using her educational background, Heather can now be found exploring environments that foster spiritual growth. She lives on Capitol Hill, where she can be found enjoying the adventures of parenting with her husband Ryan as they raise Sawyer, their fun-loving and energetic daughter. Heather is the author of Sacred Roads, Community is Messy, and Amazed and Confused. And I love this conversation. Heather is so much fun, and she's absolutely brilliant. And in our conversation, you'll hear Heather talk about a few things. You'll hear her talk about how to discern your calling throughout your life. You'll hear her talk about what it's like to minister to leaders in Washington, D.C., her advice to women in leadership, her thoughts on church and politics, and what she's learned from Mark Batterson, and so much more. And you're just going to have a joy listening to this, so get ready. But before we dive into that, just a few announcements. This episode of the L3 Leadership Podcast is sponsored by Baritung Advisors. The financial advisors at Baritung Advisors help educate and empower clients to make informed financial decisions. You can find out how Baritung Advisors can help you develop a customized financial plan for your financial future by visiting their website at baritungadvisors.com. That's Beratung advisors.com. Securities and investment products and services offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Baritung Advisors, LPL Financial, and L3 Leadership are separate entities. I also want to thank our sponsor, Henny Jewelers. They're a jeweler owned by my friend and mentor, John Henny. And my wife, Laura, and I got our engagement and wedding rings through Henny Jewelers and had an incredible experience. And not only do they have great jewelry, but they also invest in people. In fact, for every couple that comes in engaged, they give them a book to help them prepare for marriage. And we just love that. So if you're in need of a good jeweler, check out HennyJewelers.com. And I also want to thank our new sponsor, Return.com. And leader, let me just ask you this. Have you ever had an interest in investing in real estate? Well, now for as little as $500, you can become a commercial real estate investor. Just visit Return.com to learn more. That's REITURN.com. Investing involves risk. Please consult the Return Offering Circular if you're interested in investing. And with all that being said, here's my interview with Heather Zempel. Well, hey, Heather, thank you so much for being willing to take the time to jump onto the podcast. Really looking forward to our conversation. And I actually want to start with just talking a little bit about your journey. You had started out your career in politics, but you ultimately decided that the ministry in the church world was the biggest place that you can make an impact with your life. Can you kind of give us some context of that part of your journey?
Absolutely. And Doug, thanks so much for the opportunity today. It's a joy and a privilege to be with you and to be with your listeners. So thank you for the invitation. Yeah, I came to DC back in 1998, kind of ready to change the world. But before that, I was actually in engineering. Like I went to college, studied biological engineering, got my master's degree with an emphasis in environmental engineering, and worked in that field for a while. And then in a series of crazy events, wound up in DC, working in the United States Senate on environment energy policy, and just started going to National Community Church when it was still one church in one location in the movie theaters at Union Station. And some people have these great stories of being, you know, called into the ministry, right? And I would say that for me, it was more like a long journey of being tricked into it. my boss and lead pastor and friend, Mark Batterson, one of his greatest gifts is seeing potential in people and calling it out. And so he had asked me, I'd been in Nashville working as an engineer, was considering moving back to DC. And he said, hey, would you be willing to come on part-time about 10 hours a week just to oversee our small group ministry? And then we're going to hire someone full-time in 9 months. Well, that conversation was back in 2001. And here we are, 2023. And I kind of came to this point where I was working two full-time jobs. And I knew my calling was to make disciples. And so whether I did that in an engineering office or in an office in the U.S. Capitol of 20 people or in a group of leaders that are influencing 20 offices on Capitol Hill, I started looking at where am I feeling most fulfilled? Where am I seeing the most fruit? And this isn't going to sound very spiritual, but where was I finding the most fun? Like, where was I just enjoying life and enjoying ministry to the fullest? And so I leapt into the world of quote unquote full-time ministry, and I've loved it. I haven't looked back.
Yeah. So, I mean, it may be what you just shared, but, you know, any advice for, you know, I know for me, and I mean, I've been walking with God for, you know, 17, 18 years. And I think a prayer we always need to pray is, God, what is my highest and best use in this season? Any other advice for, for discerning that and, you know, how often you need to? I'm just curious because I think a lot of people are there.
Yeah, absolutely. And for me, I mean, the part that I skipped is kind of the more spiritual part, right? Like I spent a season of prayer and fasting and seeking counsel. And what I found is that when you fast, God is incredibly talkative, but often not answering the questions you're asking. It's just like, oh, I've got Heather's attention, so I have some things to say. No, they're not what you're asking, but it's what you need to hear. And through that process for me, there wasn't a clear direction. There wasn't a clear calling of that I needed to be obedient to. And so, like I said, I looked at where I was feeling the most fulfilled, seeing fruit and having the most fun. Some other variables that I share, especially when I'm talking with younger leaders, are things like when you think about, I think calling is multidimensional, it's kaleidoscopic, right? So there's who we're called to minister to or to serve or to lead. There's where we're called to do it, and there's what we're called to do. And at some point in our lives, we hit these golden moments where those three things converge perfectly. But in most seasons, especially as we're developing as leaders in our younger leadership days, there's kind of a, we have to prioritize one or the other, or maybe one or two of those. And so I often ask leaders to think about, you know, those things in their lives. And then for me personally, there are rhythms in life. There are moments. Because when you talk about greatest impact, there's a greatest impact you can make by going broad. How do I influence the most people with the message of Christ or with, you know, the leadership gifts that God has entrusted to me? And then there are moments where the greatest impact you have is actually when you go very deep with a few. And so it's discerning what season are we in? What is God calling me to be obedient to in this season? And also what's going to lead me personally as a leader into the greatest areas of Christ-likeness in this season?
Wow. Any thoughts on just the pursuit of the masses versus the pursuit of going deep with people? Is that a calling thing? Is there anything that leaders should be cautious of on the ambition side there? Any thoughts?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think motives is always something we've got to – checking our ego and checking our motives is something, at least for me, that I am constantly having to take to, you know, the foot of the cross and say – you know, God, I need you to sanctify, you know, my motives. And what are you asking me to be obedient to? I know for me personally, I try to have a rhythm in my life. If I'm in a book writing season, for instance, I know that like, okay, this is investments I'm making to go, you know, about this deep, but with a lot of people, and pray that God will use these words to influence, to encourage, to equip. But when I get done with this season, I probably need to step into a season where I gather 6, 8, 12 young leaders around me and I empty out everything I've got to them over the course of the next few months or years, you know? So for me, it's a rhythm. I don't think there's a right or a wrong. I think there are different callings for different people and often different callings in different seasons. So, you know, when I think about people like Henrietta Mears gathering a group of, you know, people in her Sunday school class and around her table and winds up influencing a small group of people so deeply that then people like Billy Graham, who sat under her influence, go out and change the world on a broad scale. So I think it's asking God, you know, what are you asking me to be obedient to in this season? And recognizing that for us, it's about our inputs and then letting God kind of take care of the outputs.
Hmm. You know, a lot of what you mentioned around your calling is around discipleship, clearly a passion. I was just intrigued when you're like, hey, is it a season to gather, you know, 10 to 12 leaders? Mm-hmm. What does discipleship look like intentionally in your life? Because I think everyone loves the idea of making disciples and, you know, mentoring next gen leaders, but they're not just going to appear out of nowhere. It's not going to happen by accident. What's your process for that?
Yeah, it looks different in different seasons. You know, I try to kind of regularly gather some people around me for a more intentional discipleship process, whether that's us taking a book and going through that together you know, journeying for a season together around some set content. But honestly, my favorite approach to discipleship is making it a lot more organic and just woven into my everyday life. So come sit with me around my table, do life with me as I do it. If I'm traveling, I always like to have a young leader along for the ride with me, because the reality is they can hear me talk all the time about integrity or honesty or patience or fill in the blank. But when they see me in a real life situation, have to deal with an emotion or a crisis or something like that, that's going to carry a lot more weight than just these words that I kind of throw out in a teaching context. It also provides a lot of time for just natural conversations around calling and giftedness and how you wait on the Lord and timing and all of those things to take place. So I really like doing discipleship best just on the go. And for me, sometimes it's having that awkward moment where I say, hey, I see giftedness in you. I see potential in you. I'd like to invest. Is that something you'd be interested in? Is that something that you'd be open to? And that takes a little bit of humility to approach a young leader and have that conversation.
Oh, I'm sure a lot of people are grateful that you do. I know for me, you know, when I think back to the pivotal moments in my life, it was a leader coming alongside of me and letting me do life with them, mm-hmm. modeling a godly marriage, modeling what a godly father looks like. And man, I'm forever grateful. And, you know, it's so funny. You ask, hey, how could I ever repay you? And they all say the same thing. It's just, hey, do for some another young Doug what I've done for you. And so that's so rich. So there's the organic, which I would agree, it's like life on life is so good. But then there's also structured systems. I know you do a lot at NCC with developing next generation. You have programs around this. What do you guys do as an organization to develop next gen leaders?
Yeah, a lot of what we do is kind of through the fabric of our small group ministry. Several years ago, we launched an environment called Freshmen of the City. So a lot of colleges put a lot of time and effort and energy into freshman orientations because they want to set up freshmen to finish well, to be all in, to be fans and contributors to that college campus experience. And likewise, we were seeing lots and lots of young adults come to DC and they're ready to change the world. I was one of those in my early 20s. And there's nothing to orient them to the city, nothing to orient them to how you do life in the city, how to be an adult in the city, and how to marry your faith and your work. And so we launched this environment called Freshmen of the City, where we try to address all of those issues and also pair mentors, people that are a little bit older, that have been around the sun a few more times, to come alongside those young adults and talk about what it means to walk in the ways of Jesus in DC specifically. So that's one of the environments that we've had that we've seen a lot of success in. It's midsize. People meet together in a large group, have dinner together, and then break into small groups. And then along with that, we have some residential programs, some internships, fellowships, where people can come and walk alongside our staff for a longer period of time. And our goal in that is really to talk about how do you develop the character that you need to sustain the calling that God's placed on your life. Mm. Because I think so much of leadership just rises and falls on your character.
Hey, let's dive in there. I'm very, very passionate about this subject, and I love asking leaders about character development. It's actually one of our values here at L3. I tell people all the time, like, character development is the most important development because we want people to make it to their finish line. Like, I had a leader tell me recently, there are way too many unfinished ministries in the world today. Mm. So when you think about developing the character, like, is that life on life? How can people grow their character in general?
Yeah. Well, I think first, it's about being intentional about it. It's about a recognition that how I finish is directly related to how I start and how I continue to grow. There's never a free pass on intentionality and discipline towards character development. And so for me, it's, and the way I've tried to practice it in my life is one of the most valuable things is just having people around me that have permission to ask me anything at any time and have permission to speak into anything they see in my life. And sometimes I have to sabotage myself. Like there are things that I know about me that nobody else knows. So I can keep that stuff hidden until it becomes toxic in my life. And so in those situations, I have to say, you know what, Jody, Ryan, Hunter, whoever is in my life, like, I need you to ask me regularly about this particular thing because I need to make sure that my character is growing, that I'm growing in integrity, that I'm growing in perseverance, that I'm growing in tenacity in this area. And you might not know that, but I need you to ask me regularly about how I'm doing in that area. And then I have blind spots. So having people that are willing to risk their reputation with me, their friendship with me, you know, my risk, you know, being the recipient of my emotional response to that, but willing to ask the hard questions and get my business. So again, it's about who you surround yourself with and who the people are in your life.
Yeah. And along those lines, I'm just curious, you know, we live in a world where everyone's getting canceled for everything. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious, whether it's with your young leaders or as a staff at NCC, do you have any boundaries or, you know, policies that you've put in place to help leaders keep their character or even just grow and develop it that you've found useful over the years?
Yeah, obviously as an organization, we have a lot of the expected policies, you know, related to healthy boundaries, relationally, sexually, things like that. For me personally, I found that, and these are just kind of personal boundaries that I've put in place. My husband knows my entire schedule and everyone I meet with and when I meet with them and why. And he has veto power over anybody that he's concerned about. And the same goes for him. He's also on staff. He's one of our pastors. And so we have total trust in one another, even when it, you know, when it comes to meeting with opposite sex and developing, opposite sex, having counseling meetings and things like that. But we both know each other's schedules and there's veto power with kind of no questions asked. Like if you've got to check in your heart or your mind about this, then we trust that in each other. And then again, it's surrounding myself with people that can ask the hard questions. And Ryan, my husband, knows who those people are in my life. So he also has full access to like, hey, this is something that we're struggling with. And so, you know, you've got permission to speak in to our lives with those things.
Yeah. So wise. Thanks for sharing. One thing you talked about in calling is place. You went to DC 25 years ago. So congrats on 25 years.
Wow. That I feel real old all of a sudden.
So I am curious, you know, I think people have all kind of thoughts about what they think DC is like. You've been ministering there for 25 years. What do you wish people knew about DC that they may not know?
Oh man. Well, I just wish, I think my hope is that people would think better of DC than they often see portrayed in the media. I love this city. I can't pass by the Capitol building or one of the monuments without having a deep, love and appreciation for where I am, and really even to continue to be in awe of the place that that I've been able to do life and ministry. I love raising my kid here. It has a one thing people might not know about DC is there's kind of a small town feel to it, right? But along with that small town feel, there is the opportunity to reach the world from where we are, and I love that. The thing that I like for people to know about those that work in the government, whether they're elected officials or they're those that are serving those that are elected, is they're people. they're people with hopes and dreams and fears and loves, and they're not a single one of them is a saint, and they're also not evil. So some of the words that I hear in media that describe the process or the people, they're people that need, that also are looking for love and prayers and encouragement. And I think are doing their best to serve the role that they've been given and the things that have been entrusted to them.
Yeah. And is there ways that, you know, even if we're not in DC, when we think about politicians, that we can pray for them or minister to them just in general, even in our own, you know, neighborhoods, community, cities?
Yeah. I mean, obviously praying for their families, remember, and I ask this question often, whether it's a member of Congress that is a part of our community or someone that's working on the Hill or in the White House, just remembering to pray for their families. Like sometimes, you know, their kids didn't sign up to have their parent in the spotlight, right? And so just praying for their families, praying if they're an elected official, praying for their staff, just that their staff would be people of integrity and people of honesty and perseverance that have servant hearts and servant perspectives. And then for those that are working in that sphere, whether as an elected official again or serving, just praying for them personally, for their hearts, for their integrity. And encouragement goes a long, long way. Mm. When I was on the Hill, you know, we often didn't hear from anybody that was excited about what we were doing, unless there was some personal, you know, gain to that. But we heard a lot from people that disliked the policies or the votes or the debates or the talking points. And so even just a quick note of gratitude, I think goes a long way for those that are in those positions.
Yeah, I'm curious, just from being in politics to being there for 25 years, how have you seen DC or politics change in the 25 years you've been in town?
This is probably a captain obvious answer, but honestly, social media has changed the whole game in ways that I think we haven't even been able to fully comprehend or articulate. Politics cannot be soundbited. And when we soundbite things to the level that they are now soundbited, when algorithms are feeding the information that they think that you want to hear, when you want to hear it, how you want to hear it, there's a lack of full story. There's a lack of those interpersonal conversations. And again, for me, it all goes back to kind of relationship. And I think that social media has made it harder to communicate across party lines, to work together, to tell a larger story, to nuance. A lot of the nuance is being lost. And that was always a challenge, I believe, with politics and with media in general. But social media has really changed that dynamic. And it's going to be interesting to see how future years are continue to be shaped by that.
Yeah. I'm curious, and I don't know if you have an answer for this or not, but from people I've talked to, I think a lot of people, similar to yourself, hey, I'm coming to DC to change the world. I want to go into politics because I'm going to change the world. The people who I talk to actually run for office or get in office find, at least from what I've heard, it's way more difficult to make a difference than they thought. Have you found that to be true? And I guess just if someone's listening to this in politics, I have, you know, friends, what advice would you give for them to make a difference where they're at?
Yeah. Well, the first thing that I would encourage, and again, this is particularly, I think, true of some younger leaders that are kind of beginning to serve in offices or be assistants. And one, you've just got to check your ego at the door. Just check your ego at the door. be more concerned about, you know, the name over the office than your own name. Be concerned about what can be accomplished when no one cares who gets the credit. And that's really hard on Capitol Hill. That's almost impossible to do. But if you can check your ego at the door, eventually your contributions are going to be noticed. And I also think that's just about walking in the ways of Jesus. So the other thing I would say is get submitted somewhere to someone who can teach you how to walk in the ways of Jesus on Capitol Hill, in the White House, in the Pentagon, in the Supreme Court halls. You know, like, it's so you get sucked into the ego and the pride and the power here, and it's real subtle. And then all of a sudden you find that you're captive to these things. So finding someone who can disciple you in the ways of Jesus there. And then also, you know, encouraging, especially rising generations, make sure that you've got your nose in the Bible more than you have it in social media. Make sure that you are being discipled by the ways of God and not what culture is spitting out at you. We were not designed to intake all of the messages that are being thrown at us right now. And one quick thought about, you know, influence and how you influence. My experience on Capitol Hill, I think personally what I experienced and also what I viewed with others is that a typical Capitol Hill staffer on any given day will simultaneously overestimate their influence and underestimate their influence. And what I mean is this, is that, you know, I found myself at one point writing almost the same talking points year after year on the same energy topics for my member to take to the floor, right? And there comes a point where, like, the first time you do it, you think, man, I am awesome. Like, I am writing a speech that this senator is going to give on the Senate floor about this very important topic that is being debated. And then after a while, you realize, well, I overestimated my influence there. And yet some of the conversations that you might have with a constituent or some of the services that you do to take care of somebody back home has a tremendous impact on that one life or on that one community. And so often that gets overlooked, the difference we can make in the lives of individual people or individual communities that we have been trusted to serve and to represent. So with younger leaders on Capitol Hill, I'm like, look, you're overestimating your influence and you're underestimating your influence. The best thing to do is keep your head down, do what you do with excellence, and walk in the ways of Jesus and leave the results to God.
Talk to just members of the body of Christ. So obviously it's a politically divided nation. There's people on both sides. People have made politics their God, I feel like, in recent years. What's your all message at NCC just to the body of Christ when it comes to politics in the church and following God?
Yeah. And it's quite a journey, right? We used to say that we were apolitical as a church, and that was our goal. And then a few years ago, we changed our language because we realized, no, to be apolitical is to strip the value away from those that are involved in this work. And we believe that this work is so important to the kingdom of God, and we want to honor that. And so we switched our language, not to say that we're apolitical, like it's not something we care about or it's something that's over there that we don't want to have anything to do with, to just that we're nonpartisan. And in our church, we have people that span the entire spectrum of political ideology. I mean, across the aisle and to the edges and the extremes, right? And so we want to honor the work that they do. We want to disciple them in the work that they do, and then continuously remind people and try to model that we're part of a kingdom that is bigger than these smaller kingdoms that we've given our allegiance to. And so it's hard. I mean, we, you know, on any given Sunday, we at times find, especially in moments where the political tensions are high, there are moments where people will leave our church because we said too much. And then other people that will leave because we didn't say enough about whatever the issue of the day is. And I think we've just learned that that's the reality that we live in. And we want to be a people that are first and foremost giving our allegiance to Jesus, which is not going to put us in any convenient political party. So,
yeah. Well, thank you for sharing your deep insights into the world of DC. You're our global insider.
I certainly don't speak for the whole of DC, but I love the city and I love the people who are there.
I want to take a few minutes and talk about church. Obviously, you've been in church world for many years, and I'm just curious, what are you seeing in church? What are you seeing for the future of the church?
Yeah, well, when I think about that, my mind immediately starts going to things like, you know, multi-site strategies, church planning strategies, digital discipleship, micro churches, multi-generational communities, and things like that. But I think what I have been most confronted with in the past few months is just, and I mean, this has been a growing thing over several years. It's just the impact of globalization on the church, the ways we've allowed it to impact us, and the ways that maybe we need to it to impact us in different ways. So, for instance, when we see the growth, the explosive growth of the church in the global South and in the East, and yet the lack of their voices often in the conversations about how we do church and how we do theology, that's what's shaking me up a little bit right now. I mean, just a few statistics that I've ran across recently, like the idea that there are more Anglicans in Nigeria than in the US and Europe combined. Wow. That 20 to 30 years from now, the typical Christian will be an African woman. That at Yale, 85% of the crew, of members of crew, the Christian college organization, 85% are Asian, whereas the Buddhist organizations are white. Hmm. There's something about the Christianity that we are propagating in the West. It's not grabbing the minds and the hearts, the imaginations of our own populations. And there's something I think that we need to learn from our brothers and sisters in the global South and in the East. That went in a totally different direction probably than you were asking, but that's what I'm wrestling with these days. How do I learn more? How do I center and platform their voices more? And what can we learn from the worldwide church that we're maybe missing here?
Yeah, that's, I was going to ask, you know, so what are you doing about that? And I don't know that this is the answer, but one thing, you know, I interviewed Mark a few years ago and he was just talking about the teaching team and how diverse you are. I think he said he only speaks like 26 weeks a year. I know you speak. What are you guys doing to get different? Or can you just talk about your teaching model? Because I think, you know, part of globalization is just hearing, just what you said, hearing different voices. What's your perspective on that? And how does that actually play out in who's on stage sharing?
Yeah, absolutely. Pastor Mark moved to a teaching team model several years ago, and I'm just so grateful that I was invited to be a part of that team. And so that's right. He preaches about 26 times a year, and then there are others of us that get to kind of fill in 6 to 8 times a year ourselves. We've actually experimented this year with moving to more live teaching at our campuses, which has allowed us to bring more voices onto the team. And there's so many values that I see. One is just you're going to get exposed to different life messages and life themes. Like, yes, we preach the gospel in ways that is very particular to us and to the stories that God has written in our lives. And so you get to hear that through a number of different voices, which just gives you, I think, a more well-rounded approach to scripture and theology and the gospel. Very practically, there are things that I can say that a white male cannot say, or would not have the same permission to say. Pastor Marion can say things as a black man that I can't say. I can talk very openly and honestly about my own journey with infertility in a way that one of our guy teaching pastors can't. So there's just topics and themes and threads that having a multitude of voices is helpful in. And then there's also, I think, a very kind of more self-serving or very functional reason for having a teaching team. People in your congregation tend to connect most, or think they connect most, with the person who's on the platform. And so the person on the platform is who people want to meet with, right? And so when you have a multitude of voices that are on the platform, it actually allows more opportunities to kind of people are going to pursue pastoral care, pastoral conversations, and pastoral connections with more people on your team when they've heard that person on the platform. So that's a more just kind of a functional, nice result of teaching team. But I think teaching teams are very helpful for communicating the full gospel and the whole gospel to the community.
I'll let you share your new title because I don't want to butcher it. But but I do realize I thought this was fascinating. One of your responsibilities in your new role is you're launching businesses as mission.
Yeah.
And I've started to see this movement. Can you talk about that? I think it's so fascinating. And please share your awesome epic title.
Yeah. Well, one of the things we like to say at NCC is we like to build planes in the air.
Yes.
Like, we get an idea and we just run with it. You've interviewed Mark before, so he's probably shared with you. His philosophy is, you know, fire, aim ready. Like, you know, he starts running before the picture is fully in place. And so my new title is Executive Director of the Dream Collective. And
so cool.
Dream Collective is, we incubate dreamers. We want people who have a vision from God. We want to give them a blessing and a birthright. We want to give them a tribe of people that can rally around them. We want to see dreams from God come to life. And so that finds expression in church planting, in, like you said, launching businesses' mission, in being engaged in certain spaces of cultural renewal. How do we commission artists to tell the story of God in moving pictures, in poetry, in sculpture, in ways that a pastor on a stage is not going to be able to do? And so this is really kind of the outward-facing arm of NCC. It's our attempt to turn ourselves inside out, to do more things where we have less control and get less credit, things that don't have our names on them. And so the business side for us, the genesis of that story was, you know, years ago, we decided to buy a property, but instead of building a church building, we built a coffee house. So we put Ebenezer's Coffee House at the corner of 2nd and F Street with the idea that Jesus didn't just hang out in religious buildings. He hung out at wells. Wells were the natural gathering places of society, and it's where he did some of his deepest ministry. And so as a church, we have launched Ebenezer's Coffee House. We opened up a movie theater in Southeast DC, Miracle Theater. We have the Capitol Turnaround near the Navy Yard now. And so we believe just in our gut that the church belongs in the middle of the marketplace. And for every church that we launch, we also want to see a business that is operating according to kingdom principles, that is building towards cultural engagement and kingdom renewal. We want to be a part of that. And so from within our church, we've seen more and more people that get a vision from God and they're running with it, are starting businesses, they're launching ventures, they're founders. And we want to, we've been able to be a part of that kind of in a non-formal way. And now we just want to be more intentional about saying, what is your dream? Come dream with us. And we want to do gatherings that inspire them. We want to create networks that help them implement and deploy resources that make it happen. So we're building the plane in the air, but we want to be a part of the dreams that God has given to people.
Yeah, it sounds like a beautiful plane to be building. I want to get into the lightning round in a minute. I guess the last two questions I would ask. One, just obviously I respect Mark a lot. I'm sure he could write a book on the lessons that he's learned from you. I'm just curious, being under his leadership for so long and being that close, what's maybe one or two of the greatest lessons that you've learned being under his leadership?
One of the things that he told me when I first came on staff was you need to have thick skin and a soft heart. He lives his life with the goal of being unoffended. And that's been so challenged to me. Like every time, it's like a masterclass. The way he is able to love people and see people and value people, even those that disagree with him most and say the worst things about him. So that's one of the number one things I've learned from Mark thick skin, soft heart, be unoffended. The other thing that I've learned from him is, I mean, there's so many things. I could fill books and books with things that I've learned from Mark. But the idea that God is always writing a bigger story. No matter what detour you find yourself on, no matter what delay you feel like you're in, no matter what distraction or hindrance or hurdle you're up against, God's writing a bigger story. And if we plant ourselves in his faithfulness in the past, it will grow in us faith for the future that we're looking into. And God's got blessings in categories that we have not even begun to dream of. And so just believing that God's writing a bigger story.
Beautiful. We could spend probably a whole podcast on this, but I'll just leave it open-ended. You're obviously a woman in leadership and leading for a long time. What advice do you have for either a woman in leadership and or women aspiring to leadership, whether it's in the church, organizations, in general?
Yeah. And the first thing I would say there, my first encouragement is go listen to the interview you did with Katie Cole a few months ago. Her work with women in leadership is just at the very top. And so that would be the number one thing that I would encourage people to do. But also as women in leadership, I would encourage you first and foremost, like keep your head down, do things with excellence, focus on inputs, let God take care of the outputs. I would say celebrate those around you. Often the biggest hurdles that women face in leadership, granted, there are plenty of hurdles that come from, you know, organizational structures and maybe men not knowing how to lead women well, but sometimes women, we see each other as the problem or the competition. And if we could celebrate one another and blaze trails for people coming behind us, that's what's going to unlock a lot of doors for women and unlock a lot of opportunities and allow more women on the platform. And I would also say, if you're a woman in leadership and you see people that are empowering women well, celebrate that, acknowledge that. Sometimes we can get so focused on what's wrong that we fail to recognize and acknowledge and celebrate what's right. So those are some things that I would encourage women in.
That's a good word. With the time we've left, I want to dive right into the lightning round. Just a bunch of fun questions I try to ask in every interview. First one is, what is the best advice you've ever received and who gave it to you?
So what has kind of become my life motto is the idea that success is not measured by the size of your organization or the number of people who hear you preach, but how well you've discipled to the third and fourth generation. And that came to me via a mentor by the name of Dave Buring. And it was told to him when he was 19 years old by Lauren Cunningham, who's the founder of Youth with a Mission. This idea that just, give your life to discipleship. That's how your life and the success of your life will be measured.
Wow. Yeah. Is that your connection with Kent? We don't have to spend a lot.
Oh, yeah, it is actually. Okay. Kent and I met at a Lion's Share gathering. Yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah. Dave's wonderful. I had him on the podcast as well. Love his heart. If you could put a quote on a billboard for everyone to read, what would it say?
Make someone's day. Just give your life every day to make someone's day.
Top books you give away, maybe one or two that have greatly impacted you.
Oh, gosh. Practice of the Presence of God by Brother Andrew, making every moment of every day an opportunity for worship and prayer. I love books like Water from a Deep Well and Church History in Plain Language. I think connecting to the larger story that we're a part of in the kingdom of God and exposing ourselves to different expressions of spiritual formation is really important. I love Jesus Through Middle Eastern Eyes. It puts the words of Jesus into the world of Jesus, and context matters. Anything by Lencioni, the Heath Brothers. I love Range. That's kind of a new one I've read. And then, sorry, this is more than one or two. It's hard to ask for one or two.
I look at the library behind you. Yeah.
Right. I believe every person should read the Chronicles of Narnia all the way through at least three times in their lives. One is a child, once as a young adult, and once as an older adult, because you see different things in those stories every time you read them.
Really, really good. I'm taking my oldest daughter through it right now. It's a lot of fun.
I love it. So I think I just gave you like 12 books when you asked for two.
I love it. We'll include links to every one of them in the show notes. We'll get our team on that. All right, you get to spend time with a lot of leaders. I'm curious. Do you have a go-to question that anytime you get to spend time with someone you ask?
I like to ask, how did you get started? What do you love most about what you do? What what accomplishment were you most proud of by the time you were in the sixth grade? And if you could go to any concert in the history of the world, what would it be?
All right. Well, I usually ask the question back to the guest. I'll go with the last one just because let's keep it fun. If you can go to any concert, what would you go to?
Oh my gosh. I would go to Johnny Cash live at Folsom. Now, the problem with that is twofold. I'd have to be a guy and be in prison, but would love to be there for the energy and just the raw talent of that concert.
What's your biggest leadership pet peeve?
I hate critique when it's not the right time.
Mm.
I love critique. There's a time in it, but when it's coming at the wrong time, that's a little annoying to me. Another one that's kind of granular. I hate on Excel documents when people don't use word wrap and the text just goes off the line. I hate that.
I have no idea if I do that or not. I'm guessing I probably do. Yeah. So that's awesome. I don't know if it's a requirement of NCCers. I'm imagining just knowing Mark's work that everyone has a bucket list. If you don't, what's something you've done in your life and experience that you think everyone should do before they die?
Gosh, I'm a big bucket. Like I have a bucket list for every year. So I'm a big bucket list creator and maker, and I make everybody do those. One of the things that I think every Christian should do as they have opportunity and are able is to study the Bible in the lands of the Bible. And I don't mean just going on kind of a tourist trip, but the kind of trip where you go with a community of people and someone that walks through the scriptural story in context of that world, because you read it completely differently. So that's something I would encourage everybody to do as they're able.
What's one big thing on your list for this year?
Oh my gosh. Well, I just went back to school. So finishing classes is actually, that's a big one. That might be the biggest one for this year. Just getting through that. I've also started developing some goals that I do with my kid. So there's actually reading through the Chronicles of Narnia with her. She's a 7-year-old. That's one of the things on my list. And then this is coming up. This isn't this year, but I turn 50 next year, and I think I want to celebrate it at Disney World. So
nice.
That's leaning into my Enneagram 7 and fun, and has absolutely zero value add to the world or to my life other than just, it sounds like fun.
Fantastic. If you could have coffee with yourself at any age and you actually would have listened to yourself, what age would that be? And what would you tell that version of Heather?
I think probably, gosh, there's so many moments that I wish I could lean into my younger self, but 8th grade would probably be it. It was a moment when it was definitely a chapter change in my life. And it was a time when I was beginning to make my faith my own, and just being able to tell myself, hey, relax, enjoy the journey. God's got this. God's got you. Just be fully present in whatever season you're in, and be fully present with the people that are in your life at that moment. I think I could have benefited from hearing that.
And at the end of your life, what do you want to be remembered for? What do you want your legacy to be?
It's a couple of things. So that might be way too much to ask, but I want to make disciples who make disciple makers. That if that could be said of me, I feel like I've lived my life well, and or if I've awakened a love of scripture for people, there's something that I've said, there's something that I've taught that has caused people to dive into scripture for themselves. I would love for that to have been said about me.
Anything else you want to leave leaders with today?
I'd say keep going. You've got this. God's got this. God's got you. What you're doing is making a difference. It's adding value. Push through the challenges, the difficulties, the pain, because it's worth it.
Well, Heather, I've loved this conversation. You actually remind me of my wife's aunt, who loves God and just is so much fun, Enneagram 7 as well. So thanks for making this a blast, but also thanks for going deep.
Love it.
This was so rich in the content. So thanks for everything you do. Well, leader, thank you so much for listening to my conversation with Heather. I hope that you enjoyed it as much as I did. You can find ways to connect with her and links to everything that we discussed in the show notes at l3leadership.org/359. Well, hey, leaders, always I want to challenge you that if you want to 10x your growth this year, you need to either launch or join an L3 Leadership Mastermind Group. Mastermind groups have been the greatest source of growth in my life over the last 7 years. And if you don't know what they are, they're just simply groups of 6 to 12 leaders that meet together on a consistent basis for at least 1 year in order to help each other grow, hold each other accountable, and to do life together. So if you're interested in learning more about launching or joining a group, go to l3leadership.org/masterminds or email me at dougsmith@l3leadership.org. And as always, leader, I like to end every episode with a quote. I'll quote Christine Kane, who said this. She said, "As a leader, you grow when you prioritize your character development over the need to always express your gift." That is so good, I'm going to say it again. As a leader, you grow when you prioritize your character development over the need to always express your gift. So good, Christine. Well, leader, again, hope you enjoyed this episode. Know that my wife, Laura, and I love you. We believe in you, and we say it every episode, but don't quit. Keep leading. The world desperately needs your leadership. We'll talk to you next episode.